and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about some tips for higher yielding soybeans. And when we think about where markets are at today, hey, the best way to make more money raising soybeans is just to raise higher yields. We're going to talk about how to do that profitably on your farm. We're also going to take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. All right, Brian, Janelle sent me a message right then, and I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? Just to start off with, you've been traveling around the upper Midwest talking to farmers about next year. What are you hearing from farmers right now? What are the game plans going into next year?
Well, first of all, I think there's a lot of indecision going into this coming year because we just don't know what's going to happen with the markets. You know, after Enlist got approved a couple days ago, there are a lot of people starting to try to connect the dots saying, well, if China is approving this, does that mean that we're closer on our trade deal, and maybe in a month or two, we get the trade deal worked out with China, and all of a sudden we see soybeans go up a buck, buck and a half. Now I might want to go back to my normal rotation, put my normal amount of soybeans in, and also how much that could that potentially affect the corn market? So we don't know any of these things yet, and that's why I say there is a lot of indecision. But when we look at our topic today, I think it's it's something we obviously have to be focused on every single day. And what we continue to talk about all the time, if you want higher yielding soybeans, it's not much different than if you want higher yielding crops of any sort. Drainage should be first, or irrigation. I mean, if we want to talk about the other end of the spectrum, taking care of that water management first. Second is fertility management. On our farm, for higher yielding soybeans, it was all about getting our base saturation K levels up to 4%. And now we're actually shooting for 6% because I want 100 bushel beans. I'm not satisfied with 70 and 80 bushel beans. I want 100 bushel beans. To get there, I think we need to be higher on the potassium level. And then the next thing is the weed control aspect. Well, with Enlist getting approved a couple days ago, there's obviously a tremendous amount of interest in that because you can spray 2,4-D, you can spray Roundup, and you can spray Liberty on those beans. And by the way, you can spray all the way up to R2 instead of just R1. With some of these other traits. So you say, wow, that's pretty nice, and I want to have great weed control. Okay, well, maybe you want to take a look at that on a few acres or something. But all I know is this. There are so many things that we can control on the farm to help us with yield. Don't get focused on all the things you can't control. If you're spending your time worrying about the markets and the weather and China and all this other stuff, then you're not taking that time and using it as wisely as you could, focus on what you can actually do on your farm to get better, because there are so many things. If you don't believe that, look around at some of these yield contests and stuff. Even 10 miles away from our farm, the South Dakota State yield record got set, 113 bushel beans, and the guy didn't even pick the best spot. You'd have picked the best spot. It was over 120. I mean, that's amazing. It just shows you the genetics today we have great potential. If we manage everything as best as we can, yep, we can't change all those other factors like the markets and the weather, but we're going to have a better crop, and that should mean more profitability.
I think if we walk in our own fields, and this would be a challenge for everybody listening today, walk in your own soybean fields and bring somebody else out there with you. And you look around and see what you think you could do to get better and have the other person give you some honest feedback and say, okay, what do you notice out here? Because they're going to see some things that you're probably going to, excuse, oh, well, hey, you've got some compaction over here. Well, yeah, it was wet. Well, yes, but you still have some compaction out here. And if you solve that, you will definitely increase yield. And you just look around your field a little bit and you see, ooh, you know what? I could have done a better job at this. I could have done a better job at that. And not to beat yourself up, but just to say, okay, I'm doing okay right now. What are some things I could do to get better? Oh, maybe I could step it up on the weed control, like you mentioned Enlist, but I just start with a 3-pre strategy and try and wipe out most of those weeds before they're even out of the ground. And you talked about fertility and you focused on some of the big ones like K, for example, but maybe it's something else on your farm. When you look at your soils, maybe it's your soil pH that's way off, or maybe it's a micronutrient that you're dramatically short in or something like that. And when it comes to water, hey, you know what? You may say, well, I'm irrigating my soybeans. I'm in great shape. Well, have you checked the water quality of your irrigated water? Maybe not. And you can look at that and see, ooh, you know what? I'm putting out high pH water out here. Is that the right thing for my crop? Is there something I could do there that could increase my productivity?
Hey, here's the other thing. A lot of people get focused on the best yielding spots. And even like I mentioned, the South Dakota state record for soybean yield, 113 bushels. Okay, that's great to talk about. But let's talk about the flip side. How do all the low yielding areas affect your overall yield? So that guy that set the record, his average on 120 acres was 98 bushels to the acre in dry land, South Dakota. That's what pays the bills. So don't just look at your best spots. Let's talk about your worst spots. What do you need to do to fix those worst spots? Is it drainage? Is it fertility? I mean, it's something you can control. You can't blame the weather on those bad spots. You can do something about the bad spots. If you get those bad spots up to even close to where the best spots are, all of a sudden your overall average goes up and your profitability is much better.
Yeah, you're right, Brian. We focus on those tough areas, and you know, you get into maybe 10% of the farm, there's some pretty easy fixes there that you see, oh, you know what, I really have that pothole out there that I could drain and I just haven't gotten it done yet. Or I've got one line that runs through there and I should really narrow up my spacing. That's a pretty simple thing. Or boy, there's one area of the farm I'm dramatically short in phosphorus. Get some phosphorus out there, get it fixed. Or maybe you've got a weed patch over in one area of the farm, get it under control. There's a lot of things that you can do to raise higher yields and to make more money. And I guess we focus on the raising higher yields, but in doing so, it's not, well, we have to spend $100 to gain 50 back. No, we want to find great return on investment opportunities to improve our yields and our profits. We'll talk about tips for raising higher yielding soybeans on your farm coming up on today's Ag PhD radio show. Stay tuned.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about tips for higher yielding soybeans, and there's certainly some room to improve on soybeans. When you look at what our national average yield is and you compare it to what some of the successful farms are doing in the area, it's just crazy to see, wow, there's guys getting double the yield that the county average is, and in some cases even more. That's awesome. And we should learn from those guys and find out, wow, what are some of the things that we could do that we can control on our farms that we should be managing a little bit different. Got a real high yielding farmer with us right now, Kelly Garrett from the state of Iowa. Kelly, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. You know, when sometimes when I bring somebody on from the state of Iowa, I'll get some feedback from other areas of the country, and I'll say, oh, man, I wish I had the soils those guys had. But it's not super easy farming where you farm, Kelly. What are some of the challenges you have to fight?
The biggest challenge we have is high pH, which really affects soybeans more than corn. That would be by far the biggest problem we have.
You know, that's a challenge. I just was talking to a farmer from central South Dakota today, and he said, man, Darren, I've got pHs mostly in the sevens. I don't have any eights, but he said it's some of it's mid to upper sevens. What are some of the suggestions you've got? And I guess I'll start there, Kelly. What are you doing to try and address some of those pH issues?
We have developed a soil conditioner, a soil amendment product that has some fertilizer value called plant food. And we will apply that on the ground. It's high in phosphate, and it's got some sulfur, which what that does, the sulfur solubilizes a lot of the calcium or some of the calcium in that high pH ground, and that will it'll allow those beans to develop a lot better. It releases the nutrients that are in the soil, and it has a big effect for us.
You mentioned that high pH is a lot tougher on soybeans than it is on corn. And a lot of times we'll see yellow soybeans out there. So I hear a lot of different strategies guys will use with plant population and row spacing and different things. Are there some cultural things you're doing there to try and manage that ground as well?
Yeah, you can really easy in the late summer to pick out your high pH spots because those are those yellow spots. And we use the plant food with the sulfur. Some other people will use ammonium sulfate. If you can spread that, that'll affect that spot, and it'll open it up. I guess I would say, you could put a higher population in those spots, but I would, instead of investing in more seed in those spots, I would rather invest in some sulfur to remedy that situation.
Yeah, it's all about where you're going to get the best return on investment, and the only way to find out is by trying some of these things out and getting better at that. So looking at your soybean crop for this year, Kelly, anything that you're changing from what you've been doing in the past?
Last year, we had some conventional beans and we were Roundup. And then because of the trouble we have with the water hemp, things like that, we switched to Liberty. I wasn't entirely satisfied. I didn't know all the hybrids very well. And a couple of the Liberty hybrids I was really happy with, a few I wasn't. So next year, I'm going to have some conventional beans, I'm going to have some Liberty beans, and I also will have some Roundup beans, which sounds scary when you got to manage all those chemicals.
Yes, it does.
But much like the corn, the corn or the irrigation we've got, it's intensive management, and I'm planting the varieties that I know will work on my farm. And when you're talking 10 extra bushels, it's worth the intensive management and the decisions that you have to make.
Yeah, you mentioned the water hemp, and that's been a big concern. Water hemp or different pigweed species, whether it's Palmer or whatnot, as we travel around the country. And weed control has really become a big focus in this. Brian mentioned that in his top three things that he would say are important for soybeans. But, boy, it's almost number one in some situations. Is the weed pressure that heavy for you on your part of Iowa?
And there's certain fields that are, and there's certain fields that aren't. And we have a lot better luck with Liberty than we do with the Roundup now. And those fields with the higher weed pressure, will have to have a variety selection and make sure that you have the chemistry there that can take care of it.
Yeah, there's lots of different things that go into raising a successful crop. And Kelly Garrett from Iowa, we've been visiting with here, certainly does a nice job at that. Kelly, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Thanks for taking the time.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. We've got Jimmy Frederick with us right now. He farms down in Nebraska, and you've probably been reading about Jimmy in various publications the last few years for some just fantastic soybean yields. Jimmy, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome. No problem.
You know, again, I started off with Kelly like this, and they say, oh, boy, Jimmy must just have this perfect soil up there. And I know where you farm, Jimmy. That's not perfect soil there. You got to be doing a lot of right decisions to get that kind of yield.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's from far from perfect. There's always a curveball in the mix somewhere, it seems like. But it's just a lot of learning.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really impressed me getting to know you just a little bit, Jimmy, is just you're always trying to get better and always looking for that next thing. And, you know, what are you working on right now? What are some of the things that you've been learning the last couple of years and others that you're still looking for answers on?
Oh, the main thing would be carbon levels, trying to imitate like what a 10-year corn crop would do, just trying to get that figured out. Just seeing how low I can go on population before I run into issues is another one. Just little things like that. But yeah, I'm never satisfied, so I'm always living on the edge, trying something new.
I love that low population approach, and it's interesting when we talk with folks in the seed industry, they're like, well, I don't know if that's going to be such a good thing. But looking at the plants that you're raising on your farm and just seeing how they respond to that, it's pretty interesting. Are you focused, I would assume, when you're going low population on getting that seed spacing just right?
Yeah, I am exactly. It's got to be because the way a plant architecture is in if it's too close, it doesn't like the lateral, or it won't put on the same amount of pods all the way around the plant. So you get that spacing exactly right where you want it. It'll shoot the laterals and put the nodes close, and it doesn't have much competition, so it keeps them fairly short where they don't fall over.
And one of the questions that we've got from growers around the country has just been around standability. And there have been a lot of soybean varieties that have struggled with good standability. What are you doing to keep your beans upright when you're raising those kinds of yields?
Using a couple different biologicals, kind of changing the way the auxins work in the plant, trying to give it enough sugar, which is the carbon aspect. Keep it short so it doesn't have to go to the sun for all of its energy, and just not putting the competition out there as far as plant on plant. It kind of gets to just chill out and do its own thing, really.
Yeah, that's it. Kind of like corn. I mean, we talk about that a lot with corn, but guys just haven't been doing that in soybeans.
Yeah, I don't think we really paid, or I know I didn't personally pay that much attention to a bean plant, you know, just that it had that much flexibility to it as far as the plant could flex. I was really amazed from what I've learned the last few years, just by slowing down and getting that spacing right, what a bean plant can really do. So
how about maturity, Jimmy? And this is another question that folks have had is, well, what's he doing for maturity? Is he planting the same maturity as his neighbors, or is he doing something dramatically different?
I'm earlier season compared to my neighbors. That's worked good for me in the past, just the way the rains have hit. As far as earlier late maturity, I haven't really found a significant way to control which one's going to be better than the other besides Mother Nature, and when you're going to get that last shower. But if you got a pivot or something, I'd definitely go early maturity. Just when you hit the summer solstice, it just seems to work better.
Yeah, there's no question that planting early, getting beans to flower early has paid, and I know we're hearing that time and time again from other high-yielding producers that, man, if we can get those beans to flower and take advantage of those long days in the middle part of the summer, we can really put some yield on. I've been talking with Jimmy Frederick. He farms down in Nebraska, just raising tremendous soybeans there. Jimmy, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yep, thank you.
Talking about raising higher yielding soybeans, making more money raising soybeans. That makes soybean production a lot more fun on our farm, and I know it does for you as well. We'll be right back with some more great tips for you on today's show. Stay tuned.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about raising higher yielding soybeans and making more money doing so. And one of the big things that you have to do is just avoid problems right from the start. You have to avoid weed problems and you have to avoid having sick plants. Your plants have to get a great start. And one of the best ways to do that is with a good seed treatment package. We've got AJ Holman with us right now with Bayer. AJ, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Darren, thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about that because you're always shifting things around here with the Acceleron package. What are you working on for 2019?
Well, we've got some exciting offerings that we'll be having available for our growers here in the 2019 season to, like you said, take advantage of growing conditions and really try to thrive in maybe what might be tough environments to really get the highest yield possible. I mean, with the Acceleron portfolio, we're really providing coverage on four fronts. So some of those include fungicides, right? One tip that farmers use to strive for higher yields in soybeans would be planting earlier. And I remember in 2018, just a year ago, we had guys planting pretty early and then maybe some not so ideal conditions, wet, cooler, where a lot of fungus could thrive and really cause diseases to impact those crop health and impact those yields. So with the fungicide offerings that we have within Acceleron, we can really help try to control that from the start, like you were saying. Now you talk about insects and pests. I was with a grower today in Minnesota, as a matter of fact, who was talking about maybe more mild winter than they normally had in the past and was worried about potential insect pressure here come this spring. So with an insecticide available from Acceleron, we can try to control those and, again, get that crop off to as healthy as a start as possible. You know, another thing that farmers are always thinking about when it comes to soybeans is soybean cyst nematodes. That's probably the biggest pest that, you know, farmers face on a yearly basis. And just the nature of soybean cyst nematodes is they can vary so much, not just within a given location, but year over year. Within Bayer, we take hundreds of soybean cyst nematode samples all across the Midwest every year. And what's fascinating is you look at the pressure, again, varies, you know, within a state, but a year over year, we'll see years where that same spot, you know, high pressure of nematodes, the next year, not so much. So there's an unpredictability factor that farmers need to take in consideration when preparing for 2019. With a new product like NemaStrike technology, it can control those soybean cyst nematodes for up to 75 days.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting when you think about how often those nematodes are reproducing. Getting long-lasting control is big. And then it's not just soybean cyst nematode, too. You've got other nematodes that are out there and trying to control those. I know we've got a grower we'll be talking to in a minute where root knot nematode is a big issue as well. These are things that, you know, everybody thinks soybean genetics are going to solve, but you look at the main nematode resistant trait that we've got in 95% of the soybean varieties out there, and it's starting to fail. So getting additional control, I agree, is a big deal. You know, AJ, with this year, there's a lot of growers looking at how do I keep my costs down? My big concern is if we don't get off to a good start, it's going to put us behind the eight ball in terms of yield. What kind of yield differences are you seeing with the premium seed treatment package?
Well, with premium seed treatment packages, we see yield advantages of up to 5 bushels. And so if you do the math, an extra 5 bushels in your pocket at the end of the day, it's frustrating early on at the beginning of the year to put that additional money down for a seed treatment. But more times than not, we can see when it comes to harvest, that seed treatment and taking care of that crop health early on, the beginning of the year, as soon as it's planted and goes into the ground, can really play dividends when it comes to that grain going in the bins.
Yeah, it certainly can. We've been talking with AJ Holman with Bayer. AJ, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the tips today.
Thanks, Darren.
Let's head down to Arkansas. We've got Matt Miles with us today. Certainly a no stranger. He's been well above the 100 bushel soybean mark for quite a while now and not doing that without a whole bunch of effort. Matt, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So, I think about raising soybeans down in Arkansas, and I think about frog eye and some of the diseases you guys have to face. I don't know how you do it.
Well, you know, a lot of times, like with the frog eye, that's probably one of the biggest disease, yield-robbing diseases we have. We've been using, you know, trying to find varieties that are resistant to it or moderately resistant or, you know, the best variety we can that, to try to combat that. And then, of course, we fungicide over the top of that as kind of a double layer of protection.
Yeah, variety selection. There are quite a bit of, or quite a few varieties with pretty decent frog eye protection, and I agree with you. You've got to look for those things to try and help yourself out and help those fungicide programs work even better. How about early planting? We've talked a little bit, a couple of times today about early planting. What have you seen in your area, Matt?
Yeah, and I haven't been able to listen to the show. We're loading corn trucks, so I didn't get to hear the first of the show, but that's one thing. Lane, my son's got a program that he's going to be presenting at the no-till conference about that. And it's kind of scary, but we're having really, really good luck, you know, pushing that envelope on planting early. Last year we planted extremely early and, you know, in March, probably the third week in March, and got 2 frosts on the beans. It took them 21 days to come up, and I was a total wreck, you know, worrying about what those beans were going to be like with the weather conditions they were under during those cold temperatures. When we got ready to cut, they were anywhere from 7 to 12 bushels better than the beans we planted in April, which used to be what we considered an early planting date. So we're actually finding out through our own farm research that the earlier planted beans are you know, in a group 4 are out yielding the later planted beans, you know, substantial amount most of the time.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we had a grower in South Dakota that set a state record here, and he said the earlier planting date by 1 week was 13 bushels better for him this year, just 1 week. And he said it basically was one more node on every plant, and that one node was worth about 11.8 of the 13 bushels. So are you seeing that with just more fruiting nodes then by planting early?
Well, really and truly, our fruiting nodes are in and up about the same. It's just a shorter plant. It gets more sunlight into the whole plant because the plant don't get as tall. And we feel like that's a little bit of the reason why. We're really in the beginning stages. You know, like I said, when we used to plant April the 20th, and we thought that was early. And now we're looking at, you know, we've went a couple years where we planted March the 20th to the 25th. And, you know, we're still working on that. But, you know, as far as a node-wise, that you know, they've roughly been coming out about the same. We're getting a little bit bigger seed. And down here, the difference is, I think, we're getting away from some of those really high nighttime temperatures and giving the plant, the ability to rest at night. And, you know, the earlier we do that, the cooler temperatures we got, we don't get into that real hot, humid, you know, Delta summers that, you know, we escape some of that. And I agree with him on that. You know, 1 week, these were actually about 2 weeks ahead of the next planting, but still we were, you know, most of those we were looking at 12 bushel increase. But I can't really say it was because of nodes, because they were both running around the same amount of nodes.
Yeah, but it cost you absolutely nothing. You just got out there a couple weeks earlier, planted the same seed, same basic program, right?
Yeah, what it does cost you is it chips a little bit off the mental side of your brain. Because you struggle with a stand. The earlier you plant, the more, and then that's where the seed treatments, you know, really shine, in my opinion, too. And, you know, we put a little bit more cost in it. If we're planting earlier, we'll bump our population just a little bit. We make sure we've got a full package seed treatment where if we're planting beans in late April or early May, we may not look at quite the Cadillac seed treatment because we're going to get the warmer temperatures to get the emergence.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I see. That's fair. And we do the same thing up here when we're planting early. We'll add a few things in there just because we know that seed's going to lay there a little bit longer and may not have the best conditions. On the fertility side, do you do anything different with the fertilizer, or you run the same basic program?
Well, we actually run, you know, what we do is we take the yield, what we pulled off, and we add back that to try to keep our soils at an even amount. And I'm talking mostly, you know, phosphorus and potash. Now one thing we think we're lacking on some is sulfur, and we've been front loading our potash. We do a lot of dry, and we've been front loading that potash early. And I think we're seeing where we're going, you know, we've done a few tests. We're doing some more this year so that we can see if we can split that application and put some late season potash out and get a little bit better pod field.
You know what? That late season K availability is going to be a big thing. Hey, Matt, we're out of time here, but thank you so much. Really appreciate all the info. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Broadcasting from the Morton studio today, we're talking about tips for higher yielding soybeans. And I just love it that we're looking at, I was just looking for some tips, Brian, from Matt Miles before the break there. And Matt was saying, you know, I might have to spend a little bit more money getting those beans in early. But then he said, yeah, but we get 12 bushels more per acre. So, you know, you think about 12 bushels, even at a little over $8 beans, that's $100. If you're spending $10, even $20 more and getting $100 in return, that's pretty good math. I think that that's going to pay a lot of bills.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't like the topic that we had for today when it's tips for higher yields in soybeans. How I think it should be worded is tips for higher profits in soybeans. So we can gain yield. Yep, that's great. But we got to make money while we do that. And, you know, here's the real challenge. There's nothing you can do in agriculture that's an absolute 100% guaranteed return. It's funny. I was joking with some guys yesterday, and I go, you know, my favorite thing that I get asked from farmers is they say, what can I do, Brian, that's going to give me a consistent return? And I'll usually give them some kind of response like, get into banking. Go into accounting, okay? Because 1 + 1 always equals 2. On the farm, 1 + 1 sometimes equals 27. Other times, it equals -5. We don't know for sure. Our job as agronomists and our job as farmers is to play the odds, basically, and say, okay, what are all the factors that I have right now, and what are the chances that this thing is going to pay for me? So, for example, last year, we looked at all the rain we were getting. In the middle of the summer, it's not cold, but cooler. So you say, ooh, conditions in our area, the beans look phenomenal. Conditions are perfect for white mold. Okay, so is that a guarantee we're going to have white mold? No. Is that a guarantee that a fungicide is going to pay? No. But when we play the odds and we say, boy, I'd be surprised if it didn't show up. Well, then you go spend the money on the fungicide, and sure enough, it paid, and it paid really good last year. So that's kind of what we're looking for. But yeah, there are a lot of things, and like I said earlier in the show, I'm looking at the water management first, then I'm looking at fertility, and again, I would say on your farm, what I would challenge you to do is look at your soil tests. Pull them out right now. Pull out your soil tests and look at how many fields do not have at least 4% base saturation K. If you're not at 4, I'm not going to promise you you're not getting maximum yield, but I'd say the odds are extremely high you are not maximizing yield on your farm. And a lot of people worry about, well, Brian, I got heavy soil and it's going to cost me $200 to get the soil fertility up to 4% base saturation K. And I go, look, if you're renting the ground, then forget it. All right. If it's a 1-year lease, then you're just going to have to band your fertilizer and do the best you can. But if you own the ground, okay, you're going to have the ground for the next 40 years. Just invest the money now. Who cares if you spend $200? If you can afford it, don't get me wrong, if you can afford it, because what's worst case scenario? If you farm the ground for 40 years, you can mine that potash out in the next 5 to 10 years if you wanted to. You could say, well, I'm going to put nothing on. if you go, well, that didn't pay for me at all, well, fine, then just mine it out. It's not going anywhere if you've got heavy soil. Okay, so yes, if you have light soil, it's a different situation. But if you have light soil, it doesn't take much to get 4% base saturation K. You might only need 100 parts per million of potassium, and you're at 4% base saturation K. So anyway, I'd take a hard look at that. And then the last thing, again, is all the other factors. We talk a lot on Ag PhD about weed, insect, and disease control. That's incredibly important. Variety selection, I would say, is somewhat important. If you've got problems, if you don't have problems, in other words, if your drainage is right, all the fertility things are right, you're doing a great job controlling your weeds, insects, and diseases. Variety selection doesn't make that much difference. It really doesn't. But if you've got any issues, defensively, you got to have the right bean. All right, that's all I got, Darren. Let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag. Maybe. I was waiting for that music somewhere.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right. I got a number of questions today. I got a few soil test ones for you to take a look at here, Brian. So we'll see if we can break you in on some fertility talks. This one's from Ryan in Oklahoma. He said, love your show. Wondering about your opinion about moving forward and getting real serious on this fertility. I recently started reading Neil Kinsey's book, Hands on Agronomy. Between his book and your show, we know we need to fix the pH first. And we got a low pH out here, but nobody can give us a definitive answer on how much lime we actually need. So I'm wondering, do we actually probably need to over lime and come back with a sulfur product to drive magnesium numbers down to get to that 68 and 12?
Nope, I'm going to stop it right there.
Well, we just had Neil on the show earlier this week, and I'd suggest going back and listening to that show. But Neil said, look, I'd love to get to that 68 calcium and 12% base saturation magnesium, but he's like, in some cases, you're going to break the bank to do it. So he said, just get yourself back in the right range and try and get the other things in balance first. And yes, you can start working on it, but you don't want to over-apply calcium.
Yeah, but wait, not necessarily calcium. You just want to make sure you don't over-apply lime. I was talking to a guy yesterday that had this issue, and we had this issue on our farm too. We over-limed some spots. Accidentally, but we over-limed some spots, got the pH up into the mid-7s, and it literally hurt our corn yield 50 bushels this year. Don't over-lime. Okay, so we got to be real careful about that. Now, when you say break the bank, this guy's not going to break the bank. He's got some cation exchange capacities of 12, 13, at the most 18. It doesn't cost a lot of money to change soil when you're talking medium textured soil. So, yeah, the guys that have 40 cation exchange capacity, we got a bunch that's 30, 35. Super crazy heavy ground. Well, yeah, then it costs a lot of money. So, anyway, it's not going to take much. What I would suggest is, and you've got buffer index right on here, just go to Iowa State, I know, has charts. There are a lot of good charts out there from many different universities. So you can make your own lime recommendation if you want. Otherwise, we teach that stuff too. I know we're going to talk about this on Tuesday at our workshop here in Baltic that's called What Your Fertilizer Dealer Won't Tell You. And we're going to teach you how to do this in, I don't know, it'll probably take 2 minutes. It's really no big deal. But we got to show you a chart, and then you can use this chart. So yes, pH is the first thing. I also look at, we were just talking about base saturation K. That's low. Organic matter's low, so we're going to advise you, try to build that up going forward. Phosphorus is low, and then you have no readings on sulfur, zinc, manganese, iron, copper, or boron, and you need that. Those are tremendously important nutrients. And I can't honestly tell you that we have fixed your biggest yield limiting factor in fixing the pH, the P, and the K, because I don't know what your sulfur and micronutrient levels are. Now, granted, the other things need to be fixed, the pH, the P, and the K, but you might have a major issue with one of these other nutrients like sulfur or the micros, but I don't know because I don't have a test.
Yep, get complete tests. That's a great tip. Hey, thanks for the questions. I really appreciate that, Ryan. All right, next one comes from Craig, and Craig's in Central Illinois, and he said, looking at using the 3 pre-program for soybeans with 3 different modes of action pre, wanting to know if you've got any experience with Satellite, which is a generic for Prowl, and also wondering which Authority product you prefer.
Yes, have lots of experience with Satellite. We find it to be just as good as Prowl. So no problem there.
How about compared to H2O?
Well, that is H2O. Satellite is the H2O version of Prowl. And then when we talk about the Authority products, what do I like best? It depends on the weeds. Typically, I'm going to tell you Authority MTZ. But if, let's say, my number one weed was common ragweed in high pH soil, then I might say Authority first and throw some Metribuzin with it. It'd still give me three modes of action, hopefully all effective modes of action. I'm going to assume your common ragweed is not ALS resistant. But anyway, I'm usually talking to guys about Authority MTZ, but Authority first might be the answer for certain weeds like common ragweed.
Yeah, that three pre program is really essential to soybeans. We've been talking about higher yielding soybean tips on today's program. Weed control is certainly up there. If you don't have good weed control, you're going to give up a lot of yield on your farm. We're going to dig back into the Ag PhD mailbag. We've got a lot of questions that have come in. If you've got a question for us, you can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here, we all know. Regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We are taking calls at 844-44-AG-PHD and questions via email radio@agphd.com. If you've got an agronomic question you'd like to ask us, Nick from Central Nebraska sent us a question, Brian. He said, you guys talk a lot about building these soil K levels, but I haven't heard you talk about when potassium can or cannot be built up in the soil. I had read Neil Kinsey's Hands-On Agronomy, and he says, you can't really build it up unless the pH is below 6.5. I'm just wondering, in these cases, what would you recommend to build up K levels? Or should we just be putting on maintenance levels? And is there a source other than potash that you like?
We have not found that to be true. In fact, this is another thing that we're going to talk about next Tuesday at our workshop, because I've got the data to show you. We absolutely can build potassium levels when the pH is above 6.5. There's no problem with that. It's just that I have to assume the reason why Neil had talked about this is because when you get pHs that are well above 6.5, let's say you get a 7.5 pH, it's very rare when that's light soil. Most of the time, it's pretty heavy soil. It's a heavy clay. It's a 20, a 30, a 40 cation exchange capacity. And the whole point is you're not going to build your soil levels with normal kind of rates of potash. So if you're going to throw 150 pounds out, well, you got 90 pounds of actual K2O. Well, a big corn or a big soybean crop is going to use all that, so there's none left to build. You see where I'm going with this. And even if you say, all right, well, let's throw another 100 pounds out. Okay, well, another 100 pounds is only 60 pounds of K2O. Well, you might need 600 or 900 pounds to get to where you want to go, going from, let's say, 1.5% or 2% base saturation K up to 4%. So it just seems like it takes forever and you can't build it well. Well, you absolutely can do it. We've been able to build it in 1 year. It just costs some money. You know, if you want to, you can use manure or compost. We really like those sources of K. And a lot of people will also ask me about potassium sulfate. Okay, well, how about potassium sulfate? And I go, well, that's great. But in our area, it costs more. So, I mean, yes, even if I figure the sulfur in there, I've got cheaper sources of sulfur and I got cheaper sources of K. So it doesn't really fit for me economically. I'm fine with it, but it just doesn't work financially. So if it's me, and I own the ground, okay, again, if you're renting the ground, it's a little different. But if I own the ground, I say, look, it's going to be in my family for the next 40 years, I'm going to build that K up, and I'm going to do it with potash most likely, unless I can get my hands on manure or compost.
Yep, I agree. I love the manure and the compost if you've got access to that for building up K. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Nick. Got one from Pennsylvania, Brian, kind of along that lines about manure. He said he was watching a segment that you guys had done about manure and composting, and I've got dry beef manure that I need to spread, but my challenge is I'm in no-till. Mm-hmm. So I got a few questions around this. if I was going to incorporate...
you're not going to like my answer, but anyway, go ahead.
Okay, if I was going to incorporate... I would prefer to have minimal soil disturbance. I get 42 inches of annual rainfall in my area.
Yep.
Would that be enough to incorporate it, or would I need to do tillage?
Yes. You're going to have to do tillage or somehow inject it, and that's the thing. Liquid, easy to inject. Dry, I really don't know how you're going to inject it. And here's the problem.
All right. So the issue is
phosphorus. The issue is not potassium. I mean, potassium, it's going to take a really long time, but eventually that'll get down in your root zone. But phosphorus is not getting down in the root zone. You put that lay it on the soil surface, you do no tillage, you're going to be so loaded up. This happened to us on our farm. We did no till on half our acres for 10 years, and we ended up with all our pea. And even K, for the most part, but especially P, in the top 1 to 2 inches. That's not enough. Plus, now, any erosion that you may have off that field, it's high in phosphorus, and phosphorus is the number one water quality issue we have in fresh water in the United States today. That's number one, way above nitrogen. Okay, so we got to think about getting that phosphorus deeper in the soil. So I understand why you want to no-till, but you can't do it very well when you're going to put dry manure on. It just doesn't work. I really don't know how you're going to do it. Otherwise, you're going to create a major environmental concern for everybody.
Okay, and the other questions here, he said, I'm spreading on alfalfa grass hay going to corn, and sometimes I'm spreading in a corn-on-corn situation.
Yep.
Would you suggest that I use a nitrogen stabilizer?
Well, if you're going to put nitrogen on top of the ground, and it's at a pretty good rate, we were talking earlier in the show about we're playing the odds as farmers and as agronomists. So what we always say with nitrogen stabilizers is if the nitrogen price is high, if the rate is high, if it's a long time between when you put it on and when it's going to get used, you know, there are a few other factors too that we could run through where we say, okay, if you've got these factors, a nitrogen stabilizer is way more likely to pay than if you run a low rate. Nitrogen is cheap and it's applied right when the crop's going to use it up and all these types of things. But what we're talking about probably here is the volatility side if he's laying it on the soil surface. And there are certain nitrogen stabilizers that are way cheaper because they only protect against the volatility loss. So that's one thing. If you want protection against the leaching loss and denitrification, now you're talking basically a step up in nitrogen stabilizer and investing a few more dollars.
Okay, thanks for the question. We really appreciate that, and good luck with the manure application.
Hey, one thing too. Let me just throw this out.
I would just compost the manure, Brian, and then you could stay in your no-till and you could put it on top. But you're still not going to get around.
You're not going to get the phosphorus down.
Yeah, you're not going to get around that stratification.
Yeah,
of the phosphorus.
So here's one of the things that I would look at. How about we put phosphorus, or how about we put manure on this ground once every 5 or 6 years, and we till the ground once every 5 or 6 years, and then you run no-till all the rest of the years.
So basically, what you could do is take 1/5 of the farm. Do
right.
tillage, work
exactly.
in manure, and then on the other 4/5 of the farm, stay in your no-till.
No-till.
So that way you're minimizing your risk to to bad weather or whatever.
Yes.
At least at worst case scenario, you get 20% of your farm exposed.
Now, let me throw this
out in
another way.
And you could rotate in wheat or something else, so you could get a cover crop out there.
Exactly.
And not a lot of different ways you could approach it.
You could also consider doing strips. If you say, well, I got a little bit of slope to my ground and I'm worried about erosion, okay, we'll do it in strips. There's nothing saying you have to do full field. Do it in strips in your field and then just work strips. Well, even if there is a little bit of erosion, it's only going a few feet because you got strips of no-till.
Okay. Get an email from Russell. And Brian, you might want to just pull it up on your screen there. I don't have it printed out for you.
Pull what up on my screen?
Oh, just get an email from Russell. Can you take that or should I take one?
Yeah, go ahead, whatever.
Okay, Russell says, thank you for the information you share with us. I'm attaching a soil sample and recommendations that were applied in spring of 2018, wondering how to continue for the next crop if I only take soil samples every 3 years. You know, this is one of those things, and there's more to the question here, Russell, but it really gets to the core. If you're in a program where you're going to soil sample only every few years, how are you going to do this? And really, you've got to look at, well, what was my yield in each one of those grid points along the way, and then look at crop removal with that particular yield. So you're going to have to do a little calculating unless you've got a program that can do that for you.
Yeah, but when I look at his soil tests, and I can just tell you real fast, pH is, he's got a bunch in the fives.
They did apply lime. He said
we did apply a ton
of dolomitic lime.
Perfect. But his K levels are down in the ones. Okay, it needs to be 4. His magnesium in the 2s to 5s. Well, that's way low. So we want hopefully used a dolomitic lime. His sulfur is low. His phosphorus is low. His zinc is low. His manganese is just a little bit low. His copper is low. His boron is low. So there are a lot of things that need to be done to this ground, and it's relatively light soil, about 5 or 6 CEC.
Yeah, there's quite a few things there, Russell, and he said the big thing is they put on a ton of dolomitic lime, and Brian, you know, the thing I've learned with lime, I don't want to overdo it, so I put it out there, let's see what it does, probably give it a couple of years to see what kind of impact there is. Now, if you're making big changes on your soil, we may recommend going in and pulling samples earlier, at least in a few areas, to see, okay, let's take an area that was 5-4 last year.
Yeah,
let's see what happened with that lime this year in that spot. It'd only be, you know, an extra sample or two that you're going to pull.
But here's the thing, Darren. I don't know where this guy is sending us information from.
Mississippi.
Okay. Mississippi's whole different than Canada, for example. Think about the heat. Think about the moisture. So what I'm saying is the lime is going to come available way faster in Mississippi than it is in Canada.
A lot longer growing season and more rainfall. Yes, I get you on that. So it's just something, you know, if you're making big changes, Russell, you could go out and pull more samples in between just to get an idea how it's working. The other thing you can do when you get into year 2 and year 3 is at least put on crop removal rates for what you're going to be doing. So if you're going to raise 150 bushel corn, I'd make sure I have at least what 150 bushel corn needs out there this year with your fertilizer program. And next year, you're back to soybeans. Make sure you have at least what your soybean yields are going to be, and then evaluate again after year 3. thanks for sending that in. We really appreciate it. And I guess good job getting started on a soil sampling program, looking at improving fertility and improving your profitability on your farm too. Thanks for all the calls and questions today. We really appreciate it. It was a fun discussion about higher yielding soybeans. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.